Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show, named Best Radio Show in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Welcome, Bill Michaels Show on the air. We are glad to have you. Thanks so much, as always. We appreciate you taking a listen to us, talking a little baseball. We bring in our national baseball insider, Seth Everett, on the line. Seth, how you doing, man?
My friend, it's good to talk to you. But I have a question for you before we start baseball.
Sure.
Talk. Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
What's the issue with the U.S. Open, because I'm headed there?
With the U.S. Open, well, the only thing I can tell you is Shinnecock, remember back in 2004, that was when the green, I can't remember which one it was so dried out, they burned it up, they flattened it out, and the ball wouldn't stay on it, and they couldn't keep a ball on there, literally. I mean, one would sit there, the wind would blow, and it would roll off, and they took a ton of heat for it.
It's pouring now. If that helps.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's an absolute wonderful time. If you like golf, if you just like walking and taking it in, the scenery, there's a major there's nothing like.
I do have a funny golf story. This is my second major that I'm attending. I'm doing a couple of Forbes pieces for it. That's where I'm going. But my funny story is the last time I was ever at a major, it was at the PGA Championship in Sahali, which is out in Seattle. And all I was doing was updates. And it was like the early stages of the internet, and I never understood how you could cover a golf tournament and leave the media center, because if you're doing updates, you need to see the leaderboard. Now you can probably see the leaderboard on your phone.
Right. Yeah, you can follow it on your phone. Right. And you know what? When you get to the venue, you can download an app that'll give you live score.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So, like, all of that's not – you couldn't recreate this issue. But I was in the media center. I had not seen a golfer. I did not see a stroke. And the guy who was supposed to host on KJR in Seattle – to host the final round, got into an accident. Not a life-threatening accident, but a pretty bad car accident.
Sure.
He couldn't get there. I didn't know anything. I will give you the one fact that I knew about that tournament. Vijay Singh was from Fiji. That's all I knew. I hosted 6 hours of that sucker.
There you go.
And it's been 19 years since I'm going to another major.
No, hey, it's changed a lot, but the game, it's kind of like baseball. You know, if you don't go for 20 years, you come back, you think, wow, the ballparks are amazing. There's interactive stuff to do, but the game itself is still the same for the most part.
Except the problem is baseball. It's not that. You know, I was at an event yesterday where I ran into some employees from the commissioner's office. They ran over, hey, how you doing? What's going on? And I said, how is it? You know, is MLB tense right now? And they said, no, why? I said, come on. I said, you don't watch the games then. I said, because all you have to do is watch the games and you have to understand the concerns. And they were just like, oh, there's a competition committee for that. We'll take care. Like, if this is not a major thing for them, I am dumbfounded. I don't know if you saw today, they're talking about radical realignment, abolishing the AL and the NL, expansion. There's all kinds of talk.
Yep. No, we were talking about this last week, or 2 weeks ago, actually, when the Brewers were taking, or was it last week when they were taking on Cleveland? I think it was, as a matter of fact. We talked about, has the interleague play worn off? Should they go to one standardized version and all that kind of stuff? Or just get rid of the DH, the American League, and the National League in that sense? And we talked about realignment.
One thing I read, though, that they would be talking about is making it Eastern conferences and Western conferences. And I think there's a lot of central teams that would get shafted that way. You know, because if you make your money on the Yankees and the Red Sox coming to town, if you're the White Sox per se, and now all of a sudden they're only going to come once because they, you know, you're in the Western Conference, that remains to be seen. I'm interested to see how that is. I'm not that traditionalist that is opposed to any of that kind of stuff. I can't stand interleague play because it makes the schedule unfair. You know, the idea
right.
that you know, the Cubs have to play the White Sox, but who, the Brewers play the Twins?
Yeah.
for what?
Well, back years and years when the Royals were horrible and the Brewers are playing the Twins when they were pretty good and the Cardinals were playing the Royals.
Cardinals would play the Royals, and my favorite one was, you know, when they created it, it was the Expos and the Blue Jays. And then when the Nationals happened, the Orioles had to play the Nationals. So they blew off the Phillies, even though there's like less than 100 miles between their ballparks.
Mm-hmm.
And so they blew off the Phillies. They gave the Phillies the Blue Jays and said, oh, that's a rematch of the 93 World Series. I said, in 50 years, is anybody going to care about that?
Right. Nobody's going to care.
No one's going to care. Now, I'm not trying to bury the lead. I thought that those were two little tidbits I could bring to the table. Great performance by Chase Anderson yesterday.
I'm looking at the lineup today. Okay, I'm just simply talking about the Brewers and the Cubs. And going into this series at the beginning of the week, this had the feel, at least, of, for us, maybe a playoff type of atmosphere. Because this is a team you haven't been able to beat. This is a team that clearly is supposed to win your division. If you're going to be chasing anybody, that's a team you're going to be chasing. You were ahead of them coming into the series, and you're not going to face them again until September. Therefore, you're only as good as your next day's starter, but it's incumbent upon you not to get in, to have the Cubs get in your head. Because then when it comes down, when the chips are down, in my opinion, if you figure out you can't beat them, then when you get to September and you're right there with them, all of a sudden, you're already out of the mental edge, so to speak. So that's why I felt that this was an important series. Can you have an important series early on in June?
Well, I got asked that yesterday on your flagship on 105.7, and you know, the Big Show was asking me that exact question, are they in their head? And all I said was, there's still 9 games left, but the reality of it is unless you go 5-4 in the remaining 9 games, you have no shot at the division. So just call it that. There is no way they go 3-6 in the 9 games remaining against the Cubs and can win the NL Central. So just bottom line it that way. That's how big this game is. And, you know, people will say to me, oh, it's June. What are you talking about? And you know me. I have been as critical of the sport as possible. But the fact remains is when you have a big game, have a big game. And the one thing I have prided myself over the 24 years that I've covered this sport is I don't phony promote. I will not promote some phony matchup just because that, you know, the sponsor asked me to. My thing is if you have a baseball game that has grand value, I will circle it on a calendar. To me, Brewers Cubs this afternoon is must watch.
I agree. I think there's a lot to this for Brewers. For the Cubs can act like the Brewers are a gnat in their face and keep swatting at them. You know, they've got a little bit of juice going.
They call the Cardinals their biggest rival.
Correct.
And I understand that, but understand this. If you lose it, it doesn't mean the end of the world. But again, just remember, you have to go at least 5-4 in the 9 remaining games against the Cubs, and if you go 3-6, you have no shot at winning the division.
Mm-hmm. I look at this this series and I think if the Brewers can win this, you get a little bit of juice back. If you lose this, that is going to be something that lingers in your head until September. Now, as we move forward, the Brewers have still the most wins in the National League. We know that they're a pretty good team, but as you see them, is it a pitcher or is it an additional bat is what they need?
I always say a pitcher. You know, I would love a veteran. You know, the idea behind it is I just love a veteran to go in that young rotation. It's not to supplant somebody. It's just I'd love a veteran person. And I use the word anchor, not ace,
mm-hmm.
because to me an anchor is a guy that I just promise me 6 strong. You know, I'm not promising shutout. I'm not asking for Clayton Kershaw. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm asking for something else. I would also love another reliever, and that's to be a compliment to the other, to the bullpen so far. But I'd love another reliever. Jairus Familia, that's the guy I want. I just think that, you know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. Rent him. He wouldn't cost you a lot. Just go get him. And that, to me, is the logic. If you could add one starter, one reliever, and again, it doesn't have to be an all-star. It has to be just a guy that you can depend on, a veteran that I can ask to carry the ball. And if you've won four in a row, he's going to keep it going. And if you've lost four in a row, he's going to stop the bleeding. That's all I'm asking for.
Want to move on with some other stuff going around baseball, and you had kind of mentioned some of the realignment stuff, some of the thought out of the commissioner's office, and I just had a question here from, this is from Mark, and Mark wants to know, he said, ask Seth when he feels that all this stuff will be implemented, if any of it. As far as fans go, when you start to hear stuff about this, see, I go back to back when they were going to do the realignment, they were going to go to different divisions, because for years and years, I grew up hating the Dodgers, because the Dodgers were in the Reds division, and it was always the Reds and the Dodgers down to the very end, and then the Big Red Machine went out, sure, and you go from there. Then when they moved it, suddenly you're kind of like left there with your hands out going, okay, who's the rival now? Well, then it became the Cardinals, then it became the Cubs. So my question is, if you're a fan and you're wondering, okay, what's the next shoe to fall, when do you think the next shoe falls?
In order for them to do it, what they're talking about is 32 teams, and they're actually proposing 16 teams make the playoffs. And the argument, and a shorter regular season.
I was going to say, you got to shorten regular season.
No, of course. Yeah, let me look. I assumed that. I should have said it out loud. The reason why I think there's credence to it is you have some markets. You know, Portland, Charlotte, Vegas, Montreal. And the argument that I have heard recently, and this is something that I did because I have a podcast coming out with a former PR guy for the Montreal Expos. And another person who I think is very intelligent who does not watch the current state of baseball. And he thinks it's not an if, he thinks it's a when. He also thinks that if it's Tampa, that American League East rival with the Blue Jays would be perfect. See, if you take the interleague out of it and make them a congruent schedule, I would love the idea of the Brewers facing the Cubs and the White Sox. I would love the idea of the Yankees playing the Mets and the Phillies. I love it when the Rangers play the Islanders and the Flyers. I hate all those teams, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But that's fine. I have no issue with geographic rivals. I'd love the Rockies and Mariners to be a rival. I think those things would be wonderful. What I don't like is I don't like the made-up ones just to justify the inner-city ones when the inner-city ones don't sell. Look at Reds Indians, look at A's Giants. And, you know, to me, the one debate is, are you fixing Oakland and are you fixing Tampa? And it has to be Oakland first because they don't have a lease and they're playing in a cesspool. And the idea is you do not want to have a team leave the number six television market. You know, David Stern's probably laughing at that because he took the Sonics away from market 12, but you wouldn't do that. You would consider moving the Tampa Bay Rays to Montreal. The idea, though, is if you could expand and you could add a team in Montreal and a team in Portland and go 16 aside in each conference and have the top eight make the playoffs, you've essentially created the NBA.
Correct. You know, I'm looking forward to baseball being baseball for a long time to come. I just like some of the rivalries that we have, and I hate to lose what some of what we have, but some of the game I'm done with. I'm done with the made-up rivalries of interleague play. I'm done with – I'd like to see them do it like the NFL, to where you play the balanced schedule and then, or the unbalanced schedule, or the balanced schedule in the sense of similar opponents, and just kind of rotate it every year.
One thing that was brought up to me by the commissioner's office people, and it was very interesting – was the idea, because, you know, the big problem with baseball now is launch angle. You know, everything is about launch angle. You're talking about launch angle over contact, and that, to me, is a doomsayer for the sport. The thing that I heard was the origination of the launch angle statistic was the shift, because the idea was, you know, when teams started implementing the shift, they were daring you to bunt down the line. Right, so if you're a lefty batter and they shift all the way to the right side, they're daring you to bunt down the left field line. And that never happened. They never taught that. Because, in essence, if you do that, you're taking – this is the philosophy of the scouts and the managers. They're saying, if you do that, you're taking the bat out of my slugger's hand. my mentality is good, take it, then they won't shift. You know, take
right.
the bunt, sacrifice an at bat, get a base hit that way.
Yep.
And you know, that's my mentality, but that's not theirs. What their mentality is, in order to beat the shift, because if you hit a line drive and you hit it on the ground, there's an extra infielder. You'll never work. It'll never work. So it has to be about launch angle. So the argument would be, if you outlawed the shift, would there be less dependence on launch angle? And then you would get some of the 10,000 missing balls in play from 2009 to 2018.
Hmm. Next week.
What I promised you at the beginning of the season was I would not be the complainer. I would try to fix. And all I'm trying to do is search for solutions.
When we reconvene next week, that's one of the things fundamentally I want to talk about is the inability for many major leaguers and teams to actually create offense via the bunt. I want to get into that discussion too.
Sure.
All right.
Got it.
All right, buddy. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Enjoy the U.S. Open.
All right. You too, pal. Talk to you soon.
Yeah.
There you go. Seth Everett, our National Baseball Insider, joining us for a couple of minutes on the Schneider Orange Hotline. The Schneider, I'll tell you what, they've been treating their people right for a long time. Call them 844-PRIDE or go to schneiderjobs.com. We'll get back into some golf chatter. Coming up next to the Bill Michaels Show.
16 stations strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Bill Michaels Show continues. Hopefully you're having an awesome day today. This portion of the program brought to you by our good friends over at Neumel Medical Center. Treating guys with ED all over the state of Wisconsin, well beyond the borders as well. They have a 98% success rate in treating guys with ED, erectile dysfunction. All you got to do is call. It's a phone call. That's it. Find out some more information. Just call them. 414-455-4451. If you have the low T thing going on, feeling run down, no energy. Ugh. Want to get a pick-me-up and you're over the age of 30, get your numbers tested. Again, just a phone call. 414-455-4451. Or if you want to jumpstart the all-in-one weight loss program, great way to do it. Great way to do it. And yes, it works. Again, 414-455-4451. The pressure is on. The first tee at Shinnecock, staring down the tumbling, heaving expanse of fescue and fairway of the U.S. Open, trying to get it right this year. And the article that I referred to, actually, I made a mistake. It wasn't in CBS. It was on USA Today. The U.S. Open, they got a lot of pressure, where they talk about 156 golfers are going to tee it up at Shinnecock for the first round of the 118th U.S. Open tomorrow. And the USGA under pressure to deliver a controversy-free championship on a course that was built and then all but ruined back in 2004 in the wake of the U.S. Open then. And then they say Chambers Bay and Erin Hills that received less than stellar reviews sandwiched around the rules of nightmares at Oakmont. The golf course and the way it is set up for the Open has been part of every story at least since the massacre at Winged Foot back in 1974 when the USGA overreacted, many believe, to Johnny Miller's closing 63 the year before. It's easy to be critical of the U.S. Open venue, especially in hindsight. What's not easy is making par in every hole, a coveted score without turning the championship course into a carnival of golf, as Phil Mickelson put it on Monday. He said, I think it's a very fine line, and it's not a job I would want. I know what the USGA is doing the best. I know that the USGA is doing the best that they can to find that line, and a lot of times they do, and sometimes they cross over it, but it's not an easy job for all of us to criticize. In recent years, the USGA stepped outside of the box, taking the national championship to new courses. And then he talks about Chambers Bay and University Place, not well received by the players or by many TV viewers who tuned in and then turned out. Then they say last year, Erin Hills, 35 miles northwest of downtown Milwaukee, was left defenseless by rain that softened the extra wide fairways and day after day of nearly windless conditions. No matter that it was the longest U.S. Open course in history, Brooks Koepka won at 16 under. Justin Thomas fired a third round 63 and 31 players broke par that week. What that fails to mention is 7 out of the top 10 players in the world. Didn't he make the cut? So,
So that this is the USGA's fault for last year?
Well,
for the weather,
he's basically saying that they take it to these new venues that they think are really cool, and they're not. And you know, he talks about this particular rider, by the way.
Yeah, who is this guy? Was he even there last year?
The rider. Actually, there's a couple of different ones. There's one that's from Mark Realm, and then there's another. And then they take some quotes out of Gary D'Amato's column as well. Gary D'Amato, who also wrote part of this for the USGA, for USA Today. But they talk about Erin Hills and the venue being new, but because they left the fairways so wide and they tried to do it in one of these new up-and-coming venues, they didn't really have a handle on it and they shouldn't have done it there.
Okay. The only golfer that I remember that was complaining about Erin Hills leading up to the tournament was Kevin Na.
Right.
Because he shot this video
of
him
fescue.
Out of the fescue. He's trying to hit out of the fescue. And it's like, well, how are we supposed to play this? Okay, Kevin Na, stop it. The USGA went out of their way to widen those fairways to not make this golf course as brutal as it could be. The thing is about Erin Hills, it is one of the most versatile golf courses in the country and probably the world, because if you've ever been out to Erin Hills, you would know that piece of property is massive. You can do whatever you want to a hole. If you want to expand it 100 yards, fine. You want to shorten it 100 yards, fine. You want to widen out the fairways a mile wide, go for it. If you want to make them, you know, 10, 20 yards wide, you can do that too. You can do so many different things to that golf course. And the USGA, they were infatuated with Erin Hills. They loved every part of it. And they thought going into the tournament that the wind, which naturally is right around 20, 30 miles an hour, that's usually what it is every day out there because of the topography, because of the hills. They figured that with that and the long fescue, which was going to be an issue, that widening the fairways gives the players a little bit of a chance. Because if they really wanted, they could have made this thing where the winning score could have been 10 over par. They could have done whatever they wanted, but they wanted to respect the golf course. And like Gary D'Amato talked about earlier on the show, keeping all the par fives there. I mean, when was the last time we saw a U.S. Open that had 4 par fives on it?
Well, remember, Jordan Spieth said in an interview, Chambers Bay is not Erin Hills, and Erin Hills is not Chambers Bay. Remember, he won the 2011 U.S. Amateur at Erin Hills.
Right.
And he said, neither course has a tree on it that you have to hit around.
Right.
So even though the course has these thin fairways with a thick fescue that aren't, it's no easy play, they're not hitting around trees either. It's not like when you're playing off the pine straw at the Masters, or you're playing even at Whistling Straits, where you have, yes, the high fescue, but you do have some trees every now and then you have to kind of meander around.
No, Whistling doesn't really have many trees either.
18 does all the way down the creek bed.
Yeah, 18, and that's about it. But most traditional U.S. Open venues have always had trees, and that's always something you've had to navigate around. But now they're going to more venues that kind of have this links-style feel to it. But look, going into the tournament, the weather happened. The rain softened up the greens. It allowed players to score. And when you've got all four par fives available, now all of a sudden, here we go. It's birdie time. You can do it. And the winds were, there was no wind out there the first 3 days.
Nope.
It was a shock to everyone's system. So that's why you saw these crazy scores. The only time in that tournament, Bill, where it felt like a true U.S. Open was Sunday morning. I was out there Sunday morning, following some of the groups. There were maybe, out of the morning group of guys that were out there, there were only like 3 or 4 golfers under par because the winds picked up. It changed the golf course. And then once the winds died down again going in the afternoon, then the scoring went right back up. There's nothing the USGA can do about it. That was a big surprise to everyone last year. To criticize Erin Hills, I just think is a load of crap. And every golfer coming out there outside of Kevin Na praised the golf course. Even the guys like Gary D'Amato said, who missed the cut, and a lot of big names missed the cut, they still praise the golf course. They would love to come back here.
Yep.
Bill, I guarantee you.
I just wonder if they're going to come back anytime soon. I don't think we're going to see a major here probably after the Ryder Cup. I don't think we see a major here from today for the next 20 years.
Could happen. I mean, yeah, the U.S. Open already has venues out for, like, I think the next 10 years.
Yeah.
But The USGA, they were very pleased at the end of the day with how it went, and it was an exciting US Open. I guarantee you there's going to be another US Open at Erin Hills. I'll probably be 45, 50 years old when that happens, but it will come back here. Yeah. I really do believe it.
I thought they liked the venue. I think they liked the setup. I think they liked the availability for fans to be able to mingle the course. There was different venues you could squeeze. If they wanted to squeeze 100,000 people out there, they could have. That type of thing.
I think, though, the USGA will find ways to get other tournaments out to Erin Hills in the near future. You know, and I don't know, like the US Senior Open, I should see how far out they have their venues. Same thing with the US Women's Open. You could see tournaments out there at Erin Hills down the road. I'd be curious to actually check up and see how far they go. I'll check that during a break. But, you know, if we don't see an actual US Open at Erin Hills in 15 years, you might see some other different majors come there. And I think that would be a pretty big deal as well. Because, again, that golf course.
Well, that I'd like to see.
You can do whatever you want to.
Yeah, just different tournaments come here. I would love to see that. Yeah. Let's do this. We're going to go and take a quick break. When we come back, Mac, he's up next. Mike McCarthy spoke to the media a little bit earlier. We'll hear from him coming up next on the Bill Michaels Show.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network. In the world of sports, a lot of people say a lot of things. But does it pass the big unit test? Let's play buy or sell. Brought to you by Bryant and Stratton College Athletics, offering athletic scholarships in 9 junior college sports. Learn more at bscbobcats.com. This is the Bill Michaels Show.
Welcome back to the program, the Bill Michaels Show. We are on the air. Time now for buy or sell. Radio Joe standing by. Radio Joe, what you got today?
Bill, Jimmy Graham will lead the Green Bay Packers in touchdown receptions for 2018.
Man, I want to say yes, just because. He was so good last year inside the 20 for the Seattle Seahawks. He seems to be healthy and feeling good. Something tells me no, and not because he's not going to be good. It's just because, maybe just because. Could it be Randall Cobb? My gut tells me Davante Adams. He's going to be the guy, but I, for lack of a better option, he should be, so I will say yes. And I'll buy that. But something just tells me every time I have something pegged with the Packers, like a couple of years ago, we said, man, deep, deep, deep wide receiving core. And then all of a sudden, you know, Jordy goes down, everything goes to hell. And then last year, deep, deep, deep secondary. You know, you lose a couple of guys, and all of a sudden the secondary's bad. So I want to say yes, but something tells me it's going to end up being like, you know, Equanimeous St. Brown or Jamon Moore or something like that, or Davante Adams, or even Randall Cobb on comebacks. So I'm going to go with Jimmy Graham, and I'm going to buy that, but I think Randall Cobb could probably be a close second.
Buy or sell?
Well, we saw an outstanding performance last night from Chase Anderson against the Chicago Cubs, but buy or sell, Bill, Junior Guerra, clearly the Brewers' best pitcher in the rotation.
That's a great question, because Chacin has been so good since after his first week of the season. Could you eliminate Chacin? You know? See, I don't think so. Yeah, Guerra's been really, really good. You look at his numbers, look at his starts. Man. He's got a 2.71 ERA, 66 in the third innings. Teams are only batting 2.22 against him. Chacin, teams are batting 2.31 with a 3.58 ERA. But his last 6 or 7 games, he's been fantastic. His last 10 games, really, he's been fantastic. So, you know what? I'll go with Guerra, only for the fact that we've seen Guerra do this before, and he's pitched extremely well a couple of years ago before the injury last season. So I will say yes. I'll tell you this, though. If Chase Anderson continues to pitch the way he did, and he starts to really get the clock up on his fastball, he could very fast work himself into being the one. Because remember, there was a short period of time last year where between him and Jimmy Nelson, they were dominant. Teams right now against Chase Anderson, hitting only .217. His bugaboo has been the walks. He's given up 28 walks this season. He's putting himself in a tough position. But he's got 49 strikeouts, 28 walks in the season, given up 33 runs, and he's given up some key hits, but teams are only batting 217 against him. He's got a whip of 117. Guerra's whip on this team sitting at 115, which is fantastic. So, yes, I'm going to go with Guerra. I'll buy it for right now, but I'm telling you what, they got a couple of guys that they got the capability to be a really good, say, 2-3-4, 3-4-5 type of rotation. And if they get a guy that they end up trading for that can really anchor, say, at number two, they're going to be pretty solid.
Buy or sell.
Later in the show, Bill, I'd like to go through some numbers of Junior Guerra compared to where he was in 2016, where he had the breakout year, and where he is now, because seems to me like the old Junior Guerra is back. But we'll get back to that in the next hour. You want my take on this next one, Bill? I don't really feel good about the future of the NBA because Golden State, I think, is calling the shots right now. Buy or sell. As long as they keep their core in place, the Warriors will win the next three NBA championships.
They're going to be around a long time. I don't know how else to put it. They're going to be around a long time. They're a hell of a team. And when you look at the Golden State Warriors, it's not like they're old. You know, I mean, you keep Draymond Green, Kevin Durant, obviously Steph Curry, Klay Thompson. You keep that group together. Yeah, they're going to win for a long time. How can you argue that? You know what I mean? You can't. They're going to be around a long, long, long time, and it may be a longer run than what we saw out of, say, Michael. I'm trying to see here, because Steph Curry, he was making $30-plus million a year. He is signed for the next 3 to 4 years. He's signed for the next 4 years. Klay Thompson, he is signed for, he's going to become an unrestricted free agent after next year, but you figure they're going to end up paying him before it's all said and done, unless he gets crazy with the money and wants to be the man somewhere else. You've got also Draymond Green. He is signed at least through another year. Who else? You got Iguodala. He is signed for a while. I mean, yeah, they're going to keep this group together. They're going to keep this group together. Kevin Durant right now, and Kevin Durant making $32.5 million. Now, he can opt out right here. But all indications are he's going to opt out, get paid, and go back. So he's going to come back to that team, and because he signed that two-year $51.5 million deal. He's going to opt out, come back, and make even more money, or just say, this is where I want to be. Because, I mean, his cap figure this year was $32.5 million. So yeah, they're going to be around for a long, long time. Steph Curry, by the way, his cap figure coming into the season, $37.4 million. Man, a lot of money. They're going to be around a while, though.
Buy or sell?
All right, last two are golf-related. Tiger Woods, of course, the big story. 10 years since he won his last U.S. Open, his last major. Can't believe it's been 10 years already. It's crazy. I'm graduating from high school when that happened. Buy or sell, Bill, Tiger Woods not only makes the cut at Shinnecock Hills, but he finishes top 15.
I think he makes the cut. I finish, I don't know about top 15. I'm going to say maybe top 30, but not top 15. I don't have a good feeling about Tiger in majors right now. He just hasn't been able to put, as we talked about with Gary D'Amato, he hasn't been able to put four rounds together. And he's been good in the sense that he can put a couple rounds together and maybe make some cut in some tournaments, but it hasn't been all four. And if he has one of those bad rounds in the first two tournaments, or first two rounds, obviously, he's not going to make the cut. But I think he's going to make the cut, but I think he finishes in the top 25-ish, maybe, something like that.
No, I mean, there's been a couple tournaments this year where he was right there, and he put together four solid rounds of golf. There were
not in the majors, though, is what I'm saying.
Right. In the majors, correct. And the Masters was a major letdown because, yeah, I was drinking the Tiger Woods Kool-Aid. I thought he had a really good chance.
I mean, if this was something else, you know, if we were going back into the TPC, or if we're going into the John Deere, or we're going into any one of those, absolutely, he could win it. But majors, that's just a different animal, and I just haven't seen him really rise to the occasion in majors lately. So I'm going to say no. He'll make the cut, but he's not going to be there.
Buy or sell.
The other guy who did not play in the U.S. Open last year at Erin Hills, which was a darn shame because his daughter was graduating, Phil Mickelson, of course, will be playing at Shinnecock. He's 47 years old. Buy or sell, Bill, before the end of his career, Phil will complete the Grand Slam and win a U.S. Open.
Stay positive, Bill.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, that's okay.
Mike McCarthy did not need to chime in there.
Nah, I want to say yes. It's so hard to win that specific turn. He may win another major or two, but I just, you know what? Yeah, what the hell? I'll say Phil will. Just because Phil's got it in him to win a tournament, you know, and he's got that experience, and he's been to Shinnecock before. So, who knows? Maybe he ends up winning this year. But Father Time never loses, and as you said, he's sitting there at 47 years old. Still striking the ball really well. He doesn't always putt as well as he should. But, yeah, I'm going to say Phil eventually gets a U.S. Open. I mean, if I had to take Phil or the field, I'm taking the field. You know what I mean? But I think part of me just hopes that Phil gets it. And I'm not a Phil Mickelson overwhelming fan because I think Phil at times can be a real jag. But I think I'd love to see him get it. Maybe the fan in me says, yeah, what the hell? He can do it. So, yeah, I'll go ahead and buy that.
I just got word we have two major champions joining us tomorrow on the Bill Michaels Show.
Andy, let's save that for the next segment.
Okay.
Including Mike Clemens. Stay tuned. More of the Bill Michaels Show next.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back to the program, the Bill Michaels Show on the air. And I just want to kind of remind you that this portion of the program being brought to you by our friends at Marshfield Clinic Health System. Don't forget, if they have Care My Way, if you have something ailing you right now, just call them, 844-CARE-WAY. That's 844-CARE-WAY. Maybe they can get your prescription sent to a pharmacy near you. It's that simple, and they can help you out. And if they can't help you, no charge. Best way to do it. There you have it. We bring in now our good buddy Mike Clemens from NFL Sirius Radio at the Packers mini camp. Mike, how you doing?
Okay. Walking out of the Ray Nitschke practice field where Coach McCarthy just called it off early by about 25 minutes or so. It's been the best practice we've seen, really, of the OTAs and mini camps because they did so much team today, so much scrimmaging, playing some football and going deep in the playbook. So that was kind of fun to watch. And so Brett Hundley and, you know, DeShone Kizer getting lots of snaps today with the offense.
Anything surprising you, standing out, anything like that?
You know, Brett Hundley, when he took over for Aaron Rodgers, remember how he would get the happy feet? He'd roll out of the pocket a little too early. Mm-hmm. And after a couple of games in, you'd see him stay in the pocket longer, like he was being coached up to do that. Stick with the pocket, stick with the play, don't leave the play so early. And then he would get just, you know, the pendulum and swing the other way, where he'd stand and wait too long in the pocket, and then you'd see him get bounced around by the backs of his offensive linemen. And, you know, the next thing you know, he's in a closet and he's got no room to throw the football. And he did that again today. It just, even in OTAs and helmets and shorts where they're scrimmaging, he's holding on too long. Whereas Kizer, you know, he's taller, stands tall, and just seems to have a better feel for how much time he's got. And he takes that step just one half second quicker and gets to the open ground, looks downfield, and delivers the ball. Kizer's pretty good, accuracy-wise. Hundley, he missed some throws just like he has the last two or three years, throws that he should have had. And then when it comes to the receivers, you know, you got Jamon Moore. He was the first one pick. Valdez Sanchez is the second guy. And then the third one is Equanimeous St. Brown. I really like him. I really like the third guy. I mean, he's just a little bit bigger, 6'5", broad shoulders. And when he comes over the middle, man, the quarterbacks are just always thrown to him. They'll look off at 82 and 81 and look at these guys, and if they got one-on-one coverage, they won't go to him. But this guy crosses over the field, the guy from Notre Dame that played with Kizer there two or three years ago, and he's just a bigger target. I mean, he almost looks like JerMichael out there when he puts those hands up, and there's just a big target there between his broad shoulders, his hands, and the helmet coming across the middle.
I had said the other day when somebody had asked me about the wide receivers to look out for, I said, St. Brown, he might be the guy before it's all said and done. I mean, he was expected to go much higher in the draft and just didn't. And he's playing with a chip on his shoulder too, isn't he?
Yeah, and, you know, the other guys are supposed to be just a half tick or so faster in the 40, but he just gets open, man. He's just smart with his feet, and he's a big target. He's 6'5", and I just think that so far he looks more poised than Marquez Valdes-Scantling or Jamon Moore at this point. You know, Moore had a drop. Moore can't seem to shake the coverage. In terms of coverage, of when it comes to the defensive backs, they won't throw to Jair Alexander, the number one pick. He's one-on-one on one of your wide receivers. They look off, man. They start looking elsewhere. He's deflected too many passes or had too many picks in these practices. So he's pretty good. I also saw him, he would start at the line and corner. They were running a zone in a two-minute in a red zone offense. He'd start at the corner. He'd cover the guy for maybe the first 2 seconds of the play. Then if you saw the quarterback's feet move, he would drop back into the end zone and play zone back there. And it wasn't until then that they would come back to the man he was originally lined up on the line of scrimmage and give him a shot like a, you know, an out at the sideline. So they really respect Jair Alexander, the number one pick.
Mike, great stuff. We'll chat again real soon. Appreciate it, pal.
Thank you, Bill.
Enjoy it. There you go. Mike Clemens live outside the Ray Nitschke Field up there in Green Bay, giving us a lowdown on the Packers minicamp. Stay tuned. Talk some more Packers. Paul Emig, our Green and Gold analyst, up next. And a couple of champions. We'll make that announcement also coming up next in the Bill Michaels Show.
Listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.